Hello, Mzanzi. You are listening to the world's best podcast presented by WAN Infra Digital Media Awards, Food for Mzanzi's Farmers Inside Track. I am your host, Patricia Tembo. Welcome to episode 440. Today, we're exploring aquaculture production with specific references to tilapia farming. This episode is set to be both informative and practical as we welcome David Fincham, Director of David Fincham Aquaculture.
Thank you so much for joining us on Farmers Inside Track, David Fincham. We are very grateful to have your expertise enlighten our farmers on aquaculture. Would you perhaps introduce yourself and your scope of work?
Thank you very much for the opportunity. It's always great to talk about aquaculture to people. Still a new and developing sector. And I've been privileged to have been part of the sector now for close on 40 years, from studying fish farming at Agricultural College in Scotland to being involved with one of the first large-scale cage farming operations in Zimbabwe in the mid-1980s. And my passion and belief in the sector still persists after all these years.
Thank you. You have a business in tilapia farming. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
You know, having monitored the sector and watched it trying to take off and launch itself, I realized about 15 years ago that the large-scale operations were going to be few and far between within the region, and that the major drive and growth with the tilapia sector would actually come from small-scale farmers. And so our focus was to develop a system that we could deploy into Africa and basically teach farmers on a one-tank system all the skills that they would need to have to be able to then expand their operations and hopefully become commercial farmers. You know, if you can't grow fish and manage fish in a small system and get them to marketable harvest size fish in a one tank system, then the chances of you being able to do that on a commercial farm are also very remote. So there is a lot of science and engineering and knowledge that one has to gain in becoming a commercial farmer. And doing that in an industry where your support services and your access to knowledge and extension services are few and far between, you really then need to have a system that's robust, that allows your fish to survive, you know, most given problems that one would experience on a commercial farm.
According to your experience, what is the minimum criteria for someone to be able to start tilapia farming with reference to the regions in South Africa, water sources, and perhaps the sort of capital that they would need to look at?
Well, you know, capital is obviously one of the biggest considerations in setting up any business. But also, if you're going to set up a business and hope to be successful, you certainly don't want to establish that business based on minimal principles. You have to farm under the best farming conditions. That includes the environment, the financing and structure of your business, your market, the species that you're going to farm, the feed that you're going to feed them. You know, wherever possible, you should be working with the best conditions and the best resources that are available to you. A lot of people who are starting in this business don't have the capital to farm commercially. Because we're farming in a closed, intensive environment, we have to invest money in capital infrastructure. And most of that infrastructure is to create the environment that will grow your fish under optimum conditions. And temperature being the biggest driving factor of your tilapia production cannot be ignored. The small-scale pond farmers in most areas of South Africa would only have conditions where those fish would grow for a period of 4 to 6 months. So you cannot have a farm then that has a 12-month budget if you've only got a 4 to 6 month growing season. And so these are the things that we iron out on a blank piece of paper before we get our farmers involved in actually farming tilapia. You know, most pond farmers in this country would, and in the region, would be considered subsistence farmers. And there's nothing wrong with having subsistence farmers. Subsistence farmers still feed the majority of our communities and our populations. They play a vital role in food production and food security.
Among, I guess, my generation, but of the younger generation, there's a perception of, you know, sustainable consumption and the idea that freshwater fish is more sustainable for buying than commercially farmed fish. What are your thoughts on that? And what does the sector look like in South Africa? Because it is a freshwater fish.
The access to fish is one of the biggest challenges that the world faces. You know, a lot of the fish that's caught around the world is then shipped far away from where it's actually required. Even if you take tilapia, a lot of the tilapia that was available for consumption locally within Africa was then exported to mainly to Europe. And so local populations have had declining resource and declining access to those wild caught fish. You know, the question around, is there an opportunity for wild caught tilapia in South Africa? Of course there is. Although we're a water scarce country, there are water resources where those systems could be stocked with fish and then managed as a managed fishery so that we're monitoring what is coming out of the system and then putting enough fish back into the system to allow a continued harvest from those resources. But, you know, there's a huge amount of debate around who has access to water, what activities are allowed on those waters. And so unless we sort out the regulatory framework and set up the processes and the monitoring of these resources, you know, then that opportunity is not available to the local communities and local small-scale fishermen.
New talking about tilapia itself, there are various breeds. As someone who has Zambian heritage or roots, I know that the fish that is from Lake Kariba is very popular and very good as well. But can you perhaps tell us more about the different breeds that you farm with or also in the environment? Just, you know, expand on that as well.
Again, you know, if you look at tilapia and you compare it with other forms of livestock farming, there are plenty of different breeds of chickens and pigs and cattle and all of these livestock species. If you're farming commercially, then obviously you want to farm with the best available commercial species. And that has become the Nile tilapia. It exceeds any other species by a long, long way. There are only two other species that I know of in the region that would be farmed on a commercial or semi-commercial basis. And those would be your Mozambique tilapia, your Oreochromis mozambicus, which basically occurs on the eastern side of southern Africa from the south of Malawi all the way down to almost Port Alfred in the Cape. The other species is your tilapia coptodon, or your red-breasted bream or rooibos kerpa, which is a fish which consumes mainly vegetation, so grasses and reeds and that. And they're also not mouth breeders like the other tilapia species. They are nest breeders. They're favored by the aquaponics industry because they would eat a natural plant-based diet. So any of your waste lettuce or other waste leafy vegetables can be fed to your tilapia coptodon.
Which breeds would then be most popular here in South Africa?
Well, obviously, we are in favor of the Nile tilapia, and we have been collaborating with government on where Nile tilapia can be farmed. There's just been a river survey done on where the Nile tilapia exists and where they don't think that it exists, which is really a bit of a moot point because, you know, tilapia nilotica has been in the country since the late 1950s. And from the 1950s up to today, it's been distributed throughout the country. So it exists in most of our water resources. And because we are now farming in these closed environments, the species no longer presents the threat that people think that it does. The difficulty with the Nile tilapia and some of the other Oreochromis breeds is that they will breed across the species and then you create hybrid fish. But, you know, as farmers, we are conservationists, so we're not likely to go and spread Nile tilapia where it shouldn't be. But from a commercial perspective, unless we can farm with the Nile tilapia, then true commercial tilapia farming will become very, very difficult in South Africa. You know, the work that's just been done on genetic selection with the Nile tilapia, we've now got strains of Nile tilapia that'll grow almost 2.5 times faster than any of the other local existing strains or wild strains of Nile tilapia.
Now that we've covered the context of tilapia itself, maybe we can move into the management of how you would, I guess, farm tilapia for farmers who are looking to venture into this commodity. With a little bit of aquaculture background from undergraduate studies, I understand that the water quality and the water itself is very, very, very important in terms of temperature and the salinity and also just understanding the breed of the fish itself. Can you explain the most critical factors when it comes to water quality?
So certainly water quality. Most of our farms, because we're operating recirculating aquaculture systems, most of our farms, the water would come from borehole sources. And generally within South Africa, our water quality is good. So any borehole on most farms would be suitable for farming tilapia. Water quality within your system does obviously vary because you're now stocking those systems with fairly high densities of fish. You're applying a high feed load. You're also operating in a warm water environment where algae growth is promoted by the heat and by the light within your system. So all of those factors need to be monitored via your filtration systems, your temperature control systems. We do add salt to systems to limit the amount of parasites that occur on fish. You know, fish are just like any other wild animals, like cattle and sheep, and things get ticks and fleas. Fish also get very similar parasites. And so we need to control those as well. Other considerations are some of the heavy metal elements that can occur in your water. So your iron and your copper, you need to be wary of those when you're testing your water initially and make sure that those aren't going to reach limits that are going to affect your growth and your stress and the health of your fish. In a closed water environment, you need to be very sure of your design and your engineering so that your water can be maintained at optimal levels. One of the beauties about farming fish is that if you have a water quality problem, depending on the design of your system, you can pump out half of the water and fill that with clean, fresh water, and then you reduce the water quality problem by half. It's a very practical way of maintaining your water quality if there is an issue. But then you have to go and investigate what has caused the water quality problem, whether that's your pH or some other increase in your ammonia, nitrates, and nitrites because of the failure of your biological filter. So it really is a case of managing your system, not on a monthly basis, but on a daily basis, just by monitoring the behavior of your fish. Fish that are swimming healthy and feeding well are generally can be considered in a good environment. You know, if your fish are not feeding and they're sluggish or they're swimming erratically, that is a sign of a problem and it needs to be addressed immediately.
Of course, when talking about water quality, you touch on diseases. How would you manage diseases and how would you then approach that, like vaccination programs? Because with other breeds, with livestock, that is very crucial, not assume the same for,
Fortunately, we are lucky at this point in time that we don't have to administer any vaccines or any antibiotics to our fish. So we're still a very new and young industry. And so your primary method of controlling diseases and preventing diseases is through your biosecurity program. So your farm must be biosecure. If you're bringing fish onto the farm, those must be healthy fish. You never, ever want to bring fish that you are not sure of. You haven't inspected before they arrive on your farm. In cases where we've imported fish, those fish, we've had them supplied with a veterinary certificate so that we are positive that those fish, when they arrive on our farm, are disease-free. And so that we could never be challenged on the fact that we are supplying fish that carry diseases or that would spread diseases. We do treat, like I said to you, certainly treat young fish with salt because of the parasitic problems. And again, those problems arise because you're farming in a good environment. You know, if you've got a healthy environment for your fish and you're then stocking at high densities, that is an opportune moment for parasites to start also increasing their numbers and affecting your fish. So again, just by monitoring behavior of your fish, you can pick up on these parasites. Fish can't scratch themselves, but what they do is they flash on the bottom of the tank, and that indicates that there is a parasitic infection. And so the minute you see a few fish flashing in your system, that's when you start treating them. Not once those fish have now become heavily infected, they're stressed, they've stopped feeding. So because we also feed on a regular basis, our fish are fed 10 times a day. That means that every hour somebody's basically looking at those fish and monitoring their behavior. And our farmers and our operators are trained to monitor those fish and immediately report the problem to whoever's going to deal with adding salt or treating those fish.
Well, I like the way that you phrase that. And, you know, a healthy environment would also then be welcoming to parasites, because I'd assume someone would think, because, you know, I've sort of, my environment is healthy, I can relax. That's not the case, I guess. So can you discuss some of the production systems that you use with tilapia farming and maybe even other species? Because you did mention that, of course, tilapia would be closed water because they're freshwater fish. But, you know, hake, I assume, is also farmed in open waters, and that's a whole different system. You just maybe expand on that.
You know, the type of systems that you farm in are only successful where the environment is conducive. So pond farms and cage farms, generally you have to be in warm water areas. So, you know, obviously we have lakes like in South Africa. The Jazini Dam is probably one of the most conducive to those ponds and cage farming systems, the Limpopo province, the very north of KwaZulu-Natal. You know, raceways and recirculated systems you can put into buildings and into greenhouse structures, and so you can then farm in those. The systems that you design that are closed systems, they have to be designed to allow the maximum use of the environment that you're creating. So, you know, your tank designs, you're limited by the under roof space that you can create. So your greenhouses and your building structures. And then you also have to have your filtration systems housed within those environments so that you can maintain your water temperatures. You know, other species that you could farm, carp, catfish are two of the other freshwater species. There has been a little work done on freshwater crayfish. I think shrimp farming will eventually come to South Africa and possibly some crab farming. There are other opportunities, but we know so little about the aquatic environment that many of the species that we could possibly farm with, we don't even know how those fish breed, and we don't know some of their feeding cycles. There are no commercial feeds available for some species. And so it's really pretty much a pioneering type environment where people would see the opportunity and then spend almost a lifetime developing these species. We've had one or two attempts at farming dusky cod, yellowtail in South Africa. And sadly, both of those commercial operations, I believe, were 25 years ahead of their time. And so those operations are now closed, as is the prawn farm that was started in Umtanzini in the early 1990s.
I'm actually quite excited. Could you provide advice or discuss some of the common mistakes you've seen tilapia farmers make and how they can avoid those mistakes?
Well, some of the common mistakes are made almost before the project starts. You don't get enough knowledge and call on the experience and research other projects that have taken place, and you just start, building something or digging ponds or whatever you're doing, then you're going to make the same mistakes. With any type of development and business and things, 90% of that is in the planning. The saying is, you fail to plan, you set yourself up for failure, and you don't want to do that. The money that's poured into a project like this is hard-earned money. And if it's borrowed money, you have to respect the investor's intentions with investing in your business. But if that business is not structured well and planned well from the beginning, then you're already going to run into problems. And the problem is that you've got a six-month growth cycle that you have to go through. So your investor is not going to see any income for the first 6 months. And if you don't achieve your targets in the first 6 months, and then you're not achieving them in the next 6 months, your investor is already starting to get nervous. And one failure within a crop, depending on the design and structure of the farm and the business, can mean that you're basically going back to square one, and you're going to go through that first year, 18 months cycle, and you're going to fail again. And then your project is dead. So we're very mindful of how that money is invested and how we can ensure that some of those risks are taken out. Many, many people who I speak to, and I still speak to at least 10 people a week that would contact me and say they would like to get involved with tilapia farming. They have zero experience, and not only zero experience in aquaculture and fish farming, but also zero experience in running a business. If you can't farm fish and you can't run a business, then you have to go slowly and develop the skills and the knowledge and build a team that is going to allow you to become a successful business.
From what I'm getting, general agricultural principles are definitely applicable when it comes to aquaculture as well. It's not completely different or removed from how you would approach an enterprise with farming on land, I guess, with oil. You spoke about, usually there are people without any experience who would venture into this, and that would raise a need or mentorship as well. Do you think there are opportunities for that in South Africa? How do you see that situation at the moment?
Well, at the moment, the opportunities for mentorship are very, very few and far between. Most of the expertise and knowledge within the aquaculture sector rests with, I would guarantee you, less than 100 people in South Africa. And most of those are people who have invested their lives in tilapia farming, and they don't have the resources and the time to be able to go and mentor somebody, certainly somebody who's 100, 200, 500 kilometers away.
Would you be able to share how you approach sustainable use of natural resources with aquaculture? Just give a little bit of insight on how you specifically, ensure that you're not mismanaging water and energy while ensuring production.
In terms of uses of resources, aquaculture is one of the least resource-hungry livestock operations that you could actually farm with. So if you have a look at just water use, you know that it takes 750 liters of water to produce 1 kilogram of beef. Whereas with fish, we only use 20 liters of water. You know, one of the reasons why fish is so great at converting food into weight is that a fish doesn't have to support its body. Its body is supported by water. So it means it uses less energy to go actually find food. You know, when you think of a cow walking in a field grazing, you've got 700 odd kilos of cow that needs to be moved constantly so that the cow can graze. Energy, you know, if you're cage farming, the only energy you're then using is getting feed from the shore to your cages and then fish from your cages to the processing plant. Our systems were designed to be low energy use systems. Because we're farming all over Africa and often in rural communities, and you need to have a very good supply of electricity, which now can come from solar, and also you need to have a very good backup. And so if you're going to back up with a generator, we've designed our system so that you can use the smallest generator possible. But then you can also back up with solar power batteries or with inverters in some cases. In terms of waste management, there's a lot of discussion around the pollution of water with fish farming, but the amount of pollution that actually occurs in a natural environment from a cage farm is a lot less than what is occurring through natural waste being produced by that system anyway. You know, if you're adding a few hundred thousand or even a few million fish into a large lake system or an estuary, that is no different to having those fish in the wild. Only difference is that you are now concentrating those fish and concentrating that waste if your farm is in the wrong location where there isn't enough water current to take that waste away so that it can be utilized by the natural environment.
You know, just to wrap up licensing and, you know, following legislature, how does one obtain a license to farm tilapia and what other important, you know, considerations are there when it comes to the law in farming this commodity? Because I am aware that there is a black market for abalone. There's just a lot, you know, that happens underground. So is it the same with tilapia? And, you know, how can someone ensure that they are law abiding, How can they ensure that?
What we've done over the last 15 years is that we've been collaborating with the government. And it's taken us 15 years to get an aquaculture bill in front of Parliament. And given now that we've just had elections and all of that political delay is now behind us, we would like to see that aquaculture bill brought into law. But in its current form, it doesn't actually serve the sector. And so we're going to have to sit down with government and with the minister and address some of the issues that weren't addressed for the sector. The licensing and permitting landscape has changed, and it is a lot simpler than it ever was in the past. But it's still not conducive to getting a business started and operating as quickly as one should. But to be fair, it's not a South African problem. Aquaculture worldwide has faced tremendous obstacles in getting legislation approved and in getting licensing and permitting approved for aquaculture operations. As I said, mentioned to you earlier, we are an agricultural sector. Our aquaculture sector currently sits with the Department of Environment, Forestries and Fisheries, which is not a bad place to be, but it doesn't bring on board issues around farming and access to commercial markets and exports and, you know, various other aspects of the industry that, you know, don't fall within the Department of Environment, Forestries and Fisheries ministry. And even though that within that ministry, there is an aquaculture department headed by a director of aquaculture with a team of employees and specialists, and there's a lot of work to do just in terms of getting all of us onto the same page and making sure that the skills and the ability to issue those licenses and monitor the development of projects and farms. We've just completed an exercise with government to try and build a database of who are the current farmers in South Africa, where they are, at what scale they're farming, what species they're farming with. So again, you know, we've got to walk before we can run. But without the legislation and without the political will, the sector cannot develop at the pace that it needs to develop. You know, and I always use the example of Bangladesh. Bangladesh is a small, poor country. Over 20 years, they've developed almost, it's certainly 100 times, if not more, tilapia business and facilities and support than most countries within Africa and certainly within South Africa. I believe that South Africa is 25 years behind where we need to be with the tilapia farming sector. It's a billion rand industry, if not more. We are in direct comparison to the chicken farming industry. And so if you take the chicken industry as being a 40 billion rand industry, Why can we not then have a 40 billion rand tilapia industry? Our primary source of fish to the greater population would be sardines and pilchards. But the cost of sardines and pilchards has increased tremendously over the years. It's taken a very, very long time for some of the commercial farms within Africa to realize that the size of the fish that you put on somebody's plate doesn't have to be a half a kilogram fish. There's now a movement to supply the market with 200 to 300 gram fish, which is basically a hand-sized fish. And if you're hungry, you can eat two fish. And if you like fish, you can eat five fish. The question is that how do you then put more fish on more plates? Well, we need more farmers because we can't take those out of the wild. And in fact, in some cases, wild fish have become so small that they're now just thrown into a pot and almost turned into like a relish because you can't actually eat the whole fish as a fish on your plate anymore. We really have an opportunity to not only produce more fish, but also to start to protect some of the wild resources of fish that are on the continent. And they're just given a little bit of time and breathing space, those resources will replenish themselves. Tilapia are phenomenal fish in terms of breeding. And so, you know, three or four seasons where you have a protected time frame during their breeding would see those fish numbers increase exponentially over those 3 or 4 years. And then people can start netting fish again and catching fish.
Thank you so much, David Fincham, Director of David Fincham Aquaculture. And that's a wrap. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platforms. From me, Patricia Tembo, our technical producer, Megan van der Vent, and the rest of hashtag Team Food Forum Zanzi, thank you for listening.
Life in South Africa can be a lot. I mean, scroll through Twitter for a minute and tell me I'm wrong. Thank God for South Africans though, right? We're inspiring, and even on the bad days, we fight back with a smile. That's why I love Food for Mzansi so much. They're not ashamed to celebrate the ordinary unsung heroes who work every day to put food on our nation's tables. Go to foodformzanzi.co.za and never miss an inspiring story.